Hello all and welcome to the Daily Medieval Podcast. Now previously we've spoken about St. Augustine, a man between two worlds, who perceived a kind of the beginnings of a crumbling empire around him, the end of the classical era and birth of the medieval. Today we skew forwards a century and just talking about a man entrusted by God to watch over the whole Roman Empire and, so far as was possible, attempt to remake it. Now that was a remark by Procopius, talking about Emperor Justinian. Now, despite kind of most of the Western territory being lost and the rise of Islam occurring at this period, the age of Justinian is an incredibly important historical milestone marking the transition between antiquity and the Middle Ages in the Mediterranean world. It is a century-long period from 500 to the reign of Phocas in 602 when all that Justinian had built began to fall. So it's a century-long period containing about four emperors: Justinian, Justin, the other one, and Emperor Maurice. We'll get on to those later, though. So it's the last of the Roman centuries. That is what's regarded by historians. And although there was a distinct new cultural identity called the Byzantines, which was a fusion of Christianity, Roman, Greek, and other local elements, which created a new civilization, new culture, distinct medieval forms, it should be known that those people living in that time, Justinian, for instance, called themselves Romans, and it was believed that Constantinople was the new Rome, despite the fact that it used Greek and was Christian. Nevertheless, outside of the borders of Byzantines or Eastern Roman Empire, external lands also took on distinct medieval forms from Gaul to Arabia, and we see, and we'll get into this, how emerging out of the ashes of the old Roman Empire are new kingdoms. Those tribes that we talked about before are now forming kingships, are now forming centralized states, are now forming kingdoms. But anyways, to Justinian. So he believed that he was appointed by God as the custodian of the empire, and that he would have called himself Roman. But he wanted to reform the Roman system. Now, Justinian is an interesting character. He's in many ways good, but in equally as many ways, he's bad. Now, Justinian's own mother actually called him the son of the devil. But in the Greek Orthodox Church, he was regarded as a saint. Some people actually compare him to the likes of Napoleon or Stalin. Born in 483 to a peasant family in Thrace, the site that was previously where all of the migrant crisis kind of began, with the name Petrus Sabbatius, Justinian, we know little about his life, his early life, aside from his uncle, who was a soldier who had risen to the command of Pallas Regiment. As he was childless, Justinian was brought by Justin, his uncle, to Constantinople and was adopted by him. As a boy, Justinian, or at this point Petrus, received a good education of Latin, Greek theology and philosophy. He was more drawn to Christian theology rather than the classics, again showing the early seeds where we're beginning to depart from the old classical world. He learned the politics of Constantinople and had a keen skill of intrigue, which helped him elevate his uncle to the throne after the death of Anastasius in 518. By 519, a year later, he was a count and given the titles Master of Cavalry, Infantry at Court, and from 521 to 527, he was consul, patrician, and most noble. During this time, he married prostitute and dancer Theodora, equally a skillful and a prominent advisor to Justinian until her death in 548. So, in April of 527, Justinian becomes co-emperor, until Justin's death just 4 months later. So from a peasant boy, he is now emperor of the Eastern Roman Empire. His immediate act was reforming the law codes, which produced in 529 the Codex Justinianus, and in 530, 2,000 Roman jurists produced the Digest. Now, a digest is almost a commentary on the original material. So you would produce a law code, and then you would then produce almost an analysis of the law code, being able to explain certain parts, produce evidence for certain other bits, you know, etc., etc. Now, this was a handbook for students. They produced alongside this codex and digest a handbook called Institutes, which also reformed the legal studies in the empire. A millennia of Roman law codes culminated in this reform, but as such, Justinian had created a distinct new Christian authority. He insisted throughout the codex that God entrusted the government of the empire to him alone, and that this law should attempt to establish the laws of heaven on earth. And it lay the foundations of medieval kingship, this idea that the leader, be it a emperor or a king, was chosen by God. Equally, there were also provincial reforms. Now, his pursuit to reform law was accompanied by an equally strong approach to Christian unification. From the beginning of his reign, he attempted to eliminate heresy and create a singular doctrine, namely through the Council of Chalcedon in 551, which outlawed polytheism. Reform and social order did not only defy his reign, but Justinian was also thought that. Reform and social order did not only define his reign, but Justinian also fought wars against Persian, who ruled the Sassanian dynasty and was a traditional opponent of Rome. Peace was achieved for a time in 532, but it was only short-lived. And then the culmination of Justinian's reign comes in 532, where we get the infamous Nika riots, where urban rioters chanting Nika, or victory in Greek, demanded the removal of some high officials chosen by the emperor. Now, this potentially spurred on through a rival of aristocratic opponents who sought a coup, but nevertheless, fires destroyed the heart of the city, even reaching the palace itself. Justinian decided not to flee, and his generals Belisarius and Narses were able to restore order by slaughtering thousands of rioters in the Hippodrome. Justinian interpreted his survival, be it kind of tiltering on the edge of a sword, as divine support, which spurred on his religious zeal, and he began to restore much of the city and began ambitious building projects. First was the Hagia Sophia near the palace, resembling an early church destroyed in the fire, but it embodied the spirit of Christian reform. The next grand project was to conquer the Vandal kingdom of Carthage. Motivated by heresy, Justinian launched an attack on the Arian Vandals in 533. A rapid victory was won by Belisarius and his 15,000 men. Spurred once more by divine aid, he then faced the Ostrogoths in Italy, attempting to reclaim the old Roman capital. Now, and this was in 535, and while Sicily fell quickly, it would take 20 years of fighting to defeat the Ostrogoths. Nevertheless, whilst the 530s were marked by success for Justinian, the 540s witnessed a downfall. Fighting with Persia then resumed. A fierce plague known as the Plague of Justinian broke out and killed millions, which substantially diminished resources. In 543, the Three Chapters controversy broke out as a result of Justinian's attempts to reconcile Chalcedonian and anti-Chalcedonian Christians, whilst maintaining the support of the Western clergy. Now, jostling with religion and heresy alienated the West by interpreting doctrines, as it was believed that this was the job of the priest, not the emperor. His insistence on being connected to God left a bitter taste between Constantinople and the papacy, one which we will see pop up many a time in the future of the medieval era. The final decades of Justinian's reign continued to be disappointing. War with Italy continued on. In 548, Theodora, his beloved wife, died. The dome of the Hagia Sophia collapsed and cracked. And in 559, Slav raiders and Huns raided all the way up to the walls of Constantinople, forcing to call Belisarius out of retirement in order to deal with it. Earthquakes also struck the empire, civil disturbance rocked Constantinople, and ambitious men sought to depose Justinian. The peace with Persia came at a great cost as well, which put strain on the economics of the empire. Justinian's tireless efforts for religious unity bore bittersweet fruit. Though bishops at the Justinian's tireless efforts for religious unity bore bittersweet fruit. Through bishops at the Second Council of Constantinople, finally condemned the three chapters in 533, the rift with the Western clerics only deepened further. His aim to reach an understanding with anti-Chalcedonians also failed, leaving to an independent clerical hierarchy. Nevertheless, the acceptance of Justinian's claim in 533 was an enactment of his views of the imperial relations with the church. Yet even this was contested by the end of his life. And so all that he had built was beginning to crumble already. The issue faded in 565, when although eager and hopeful in his early life, by the end he was angered and frustrated. Now we turn to the successors of Justinian, those who attempted to maintain the glory, the ideology of the age of Justinian. Now this was Justin II from 556 to 578, Tiberius Constantine from 578 to 582, and Maurice, who ruled from 582 to 602. They maintained the general direction of Justinian's rule, though they adapted policy to the given circumstances. So it was a version of what Justinian had hoped to present his ideology as. Under Justin, a war with Persia resulted in a large loss of Roman territory and its revenues. And now alongside this, the Lombards seize Italy, and Slavs and Avars gained a foothold in the Balkans. Under Tiberius, war with Persia continued, and a failed attempt to retake Lombard Italy was made. He also created Exarchs, a new local administrator in Italy in 584 and in Africa in 591, which combined military and civilian responsibilities and was regarded as a major administrative reform. The Balkans worsened, and aggressive forces of Avar tribes probed Roman defences that were weakened by the Persian front. They captured Sirmium, and the Slavic settlement continued. Domestically, Tiberius avoided religious disputes by taking a back seat. He died and was succeeded by his general, Maurice, who had been a commander at the Persian front. As Tiberius depleted the treasury, Maurice was forced to limit public expenditure and military pay, which earned him much disfavor. Nevertheless, like Tiberius, he aimed to maintain a tolerant posture between Chalcedonians and anti-Chalcedonians, and he fell into serious quarrels with Gregory the Great, the infamous saint and pope. Nevertheless, war with Persia took a positive turn, and the new Persian king, Curso II, received Roman support. Peace seemed to be achieved. He also reinserted control over the Avars and the Balkans within a decade, and in 602 he ordered troops to camp over winter north of the Danube. Now, although this was strategically sound, his troops mutinied. One of those soldiers, Phocas, marched to Constantinople, killed Maurice, and claimed the throne, beginning a decade of mistrust. Which would put an end to the age of Justinian. And so there we are. And now, in the meantime, during, if we scoop back to Justinian's reign, all whilst this was going on, all whilst we have religious quarrels, territorial movements, military expeditions, new kingdoms and new peoples arose, and which put pressure on the empire. Because, for instance, you had... Because by 527, when Justinian came to power, there was four major kingdoms that had emerged from the ashes of Rome. You had the Ostrogoths in Italy, the Vandals in North Africa, the Visigoths in Spain, and the Franks in Gaul and beyond the Rhine. Now, there was a complex relationship between the rulers and the Roman citizens, with varying degrees of civility, and they also maintained ties with Constantinople. But these new kingdoms, however, were primarily heretical, and there was instances of persecution, but nevertheless, the kingdoms evolved under the influence of Rome and Justinian and his policies, and he was eager to recover these lost territories and to do away with the heretical heresy of the new kings. Now we see, for instance, as said, Justinian first set his sights on Carthage in 533 and then Ostrogothic Italy in 535 to 555. Now, whilst this war endured, he also captured parts of Spain, trying to recover the lost parts of the Roman territory and against the Ostrogoths. But he had to contend with successive popes who challenged his doctrine and beliefs of imperial policy, and he had to choose but to coexist with the Franks, who had established a new kingdom in 5th and 6th centuries in Gaul, in order to combat the Ostrogoths, the Lombards, the Visigoths, but also the popes. He needed an ally. And these were the Franks, based in the Loire and Rhine region. And at this time, it was the Merovingian dynasty under King Clovis, 481 to 511, who had adopted Christianity. And so the Franks readily merged with the Gallo-Roman population and were keen allies of Justinian. But nevertheless, though the Franks had a history of diplomatic relations, there were also instances where the Franks were opportunistic, and in the war against the Ostrogoths, it seemed that the Franks fought both sides. Now, whilst not as institutionally sophisticated, the Franks stood as major powers in Western Europe through the age of Justinian. They had stability, civic organization, Catholicism, one which was closely related to Constantinople. And so the Franks won high praise amongst the Romans in Constantinople. But although Justinian's death in 565 spared him open conflict with the Lombards, whose invasion of the 560s was a direct consequence of earlier issues, the result was a warlike kingdom which lasted until the age of Charlemagne in 774. So we see throughout the age of Justinian, kingdoms, tribes becoming kingdoms. We see some of them, like the Franks, working with Constantinople, whilst others, like the Ostrogoths, like the Lombards, like the Visigoths, have rub against the borders of the empire. There are vast tensions, there are wars, and so there is a jostle for power in Europe. Now, alongside this, there are also confederacies of people. We see the looming Avars, who, although they were allied with Justinian, eventually ended up turning against them during the reign of Emperor Maurice, as Slavs and Avars gained control of most of Greece and the Danube, and were a constant threat to Constantinople. In North Africa, we see tribes of Berbers, such as the descent of St. Augustine, what he was part of. We see tribes of Berbers pressing against the northern Roman settlements in North Africa, attacking farmsteads. And whilst the Romans were attempting to overthrow the Vandal kingdom, and they successfully did this, this only put them further and closer to the upcoming Berber issues, one that would not be able to be answered until the Muslim conquests of North Africa. So it was an issue that was never solved by Justinian in the or by his successors. And we see to the southeast, in the fringes of Arabia, both Romans and Persians contended with groups of Arab people, a newly developed culture group, who were, although not a threat in the 6th century, after accepting Islam in conjunction with armies in the Arabian Peninsula, would utterly change the geopolitical contours of the Mediterranean within a century of Justinian's death. And so there is so much going on at the moment in terms of social mobility, in terms of culture groups. We see tribes becoming kingdoms and peoples becoming confederacies and establishing themselves as well, all whilst a new culture group, a dominant culture group called Byzantines, was developing in Europe. It is a time of so much change. More so, I would argue, than the in the age of Augustine. Within the age of Augustine, we see the crumbling empire, but it's predominantly still Roman. It's the reactions of Rome, the immediate aftermath of it. But during that century, we see a growing departure from the classical era and this development of a new world, a new medieval world. And so there we are. Thank you for watching. I hope you enjoy. And see you next week.